Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. support by His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The fault of the saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach the devotee, as in the case of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. The devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhisthira. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favours from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. Tasmalidam nivatancham yavasya bharat vadatashabam tashyana vihito natta natta pahi pujaprabha. A best among the descendants of Bharat Yudhisthira. I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head, and, my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. Here in this scene, Bhishma Dev is lying on a bed of arrows, and fast approaching is the time that he will leave this world, and Krishna and the Pandavas have approached Bhishma, especially to help convince Yudhisthira that he should rule over the kingdom, which meant the whole world, which had been attained in the conquest, in the battle of Kurukshetra. Yudhisthira felt that because so many people died just so that he could be the ruler, that he was practically feeling ashamed, to accept any profit out of such a war and to rule the world when so many persons had died, and of course those who were surviving, the women, the children, and what have you, that they were lamenting the loss practically of their entire family members and friends. So no one could convince Yudhisthira Maharaj that he should take up ruling the world. So Lord Krishna had spoken to Yudhisthira, and so many great sages, including Śrīla Vyāsadeva himself, Radha Muni, the Pandavas themselves. They wanted to try to convince Yudhisthira, but he would not be convinced. And of course, we can understand that Lord Krishna, in essence, wanted to glorify Bhishma. So within the heart of Yudhisthira, Krishna allowed Yudhisthira to remain unconvinced, so that Bhishma Dev could be glorified as a great devotee of the Lord. Which is very important because, Bhishma was fought on the other side of Krishna. So, one may mistakenly think that Bhishma may not be counted amongst Krishna's devotees, but actually Krishna wanted to show that he's one of my greatest devotees. So when Krishna and the Pandavas approached Vishnudev, Vishnu of course was in a lot of suffering, actually, because of the injuries through the war. You know, he'd been pierced practically in every part of his body and by arrows, by great warriors. Krishna, and he was wondering, how can I actually speak to Yudhisthira? And Krishna gave him the blessing that you will, from this point on, you will speak, and your memory, your perception of things will be completely unclouded. There will be no bewilderment. You will see, knowledge just as clearly as one may see fish swimming in a clear pond of water. It's like we have the pond of water out there, and sometimes, especially when it's been cleaned, you can look in and see a little fish very clearly. So Krishna gave him that benediction that and therefore from that point on, actually Vishnudeva felt no suffering, no pain, and his consciousness was completely unclouded. Of course, we see this also how devotees are not under the influence of material energy, whether they suffer or don't suffer. So sometimes we see that Srila Prabhupada also, at some stages he appeared to go through different pain or suffering. And at other times we see that by Krishna's will that he was completely transcendental to his circumstances, and therefore at the very last stages of Srila Prabhupada's life he was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, practically right to his last breath. And if you read those purports of Srila Prabhupada, there's no difference in his clarity of thought, when he's doing those purports, although very practically he was physically, the body was so weak that the words, just to speak a word or two, was a huge effort. But still, Krishna gave him complete clarity of consciousness right to the very last breath. And therefore, he was able to do the purports to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and of course, fix his mind upon Krishna without any obstacles, without any disturbance. So, this is the setting. Bhishma is trying to convince Yudhisthira. This verse here is one of the verses which is sort of coming to the conclusions of Vishnudev's argument to convince Yudhisthira. It sort of began in verse 11 or 12. Bhishma started speaking, and the essence of Yudhisthira's initial instructions. So Bhishma's initial instructions to Yudhisthira was that, I am not begrudging or despondent, as a result of the very trying circumstances that have, in my life that have led up to this point, and nor should you be. Bhishma pointed out, not so much. It is well known, of course, Bhishmadev went through extreme difficulties and disappointments, from over a long lifetime. But that was there. But he was also, pointing out that what was even worse is seeing those that he loved, such as the Pandavas, Kunti, seeing them suffer or go through so much difficulty. That was also, in one sense, an even greater tragedy or difficulty, trying circumstances for Bhishma. He didn't want to see them suffer like that. So he pointed out that, this is all destined by providence. We have these words, destiny and providence. Words which are bandied around, especially by all the pseudo-spiritualists and clairvoyants in Kali Yuga. And they bandy around these terms of destiny and, providence without even the slightest inkling of really what they mean and, what laws govern these things. So, actually, all these things are revealed very nicely in this chapter by Vishwanath. So he says it's destined by providence. and then he points out, so what is that? What is controlling destiny? What is, and providence? Those things which are meant to happen, which we cannot avoid. We catch up with our destiny. He says this is, providence is actually controlled by kala or time. So then he explains further. So what is time? What is kala? Kala is the forceful representative of the Lord in the material world. And then we'll see in the next few verses, Bhishma clarifies, we won't go into it today, but Bhishma clarifies that actually this kala, time, is identical with Krishna. It's Krishna's energy, so that's discussed in more depth in the next few verses. But, he hints that this kala, at this point, that kala is identical with the Lord, and it represents the inexplicable wish or plan of the Lord. So this is a very nice, description of an understanding of destiny or providence. practically, therefore, we see that, unless one is a devotee of the Lord, practically they're not qualified to practice any sort of, foretelling the future. What other words they use for that? Prophesizing. Helping people to understand what has happened to them, in the course of providence. Actually, unless one is a devotee of the Lord, one has no jurisdiction to speak as soon as these topics come up, because ultimately we see that we follow it through the destiny and providence are controlled by time. Time is a representative of the Lord, which is not different from Krishna. The time is actually representing the wish or the plan of the Lord. So, but this, Bhishma points out, what to speak of those who are not devotees, even great souls. They find it almost impossible actually to understand the plan of the Lord, even though they may try to. But here in this verse, Bhishma points out that if by the grace of the Lord that the plan is revealed to his devotee and one follows it, then this is very pleasing to the Lord. This is what one should do. One should do it because it's very pleasing to the Lord. And of course, we also see that as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, that when one acts on behalf of the Lord, it's not different from jagya, and there is no karmic reaction to such activity. So therefore, Bhishma Dev concludes that despite all the suffering, one should follow the plan, the Lord's plan. That's how he concludes. And what is that? He says here, you should establish virtue and peace in the world, therefore, without lethargy, without being in a begrudging mood, without hesitation, you just execute this order of the Lord. How is that possible? That there may be so much tribulation, so much suffering, and one will not hesitate, because, as Prabhupada points out here, that since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two, between the tribulations, the good and the bad that a devotee undergoes, the happiness and distress that a devotee undergoes in trying to execute the plan of the Lord. There's no real difference. Actually, a pure devotee accepts both of them as favours of the Lord. So, therefore, because the devotee is always accepting everything as a favour from the Lord, there's no hesitation, and there's no a devotee does not begrudge is not lethargic about one's duty. So a very nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text number 30, where Krishna said to Arjuna, "Surrender all works unto me, in full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, without claims for proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight." Nice verse, Bhagavad Gita. So, in essence, now, Bhishma Dev is saying that everything that's happened to Yudhishthira Maharaj is actually within the plan of the Lord. He's saying that because Yudhishthira Maharaj is actually, incarnation of Dharma. Yudhishthira Maharaj is the incarnation of religion personified. There's no question that therefore he has karma as a result of sinful activity. He's the very personification of religious principles. So how could we say that he's suffering from karma? So therefore, it is Bhishma is concluding that this is the will of the Lord. As Prabhupada points out, that everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time, even if one is the most pious person. So here we see that Yudhishthira, personalities like Bhishma, the Pandavas, Queen Kunti, very, very pious, the greatest, the most pious persons. Still, everyone in the material world has to suffer the actions and reactions of time. As long as we're in this material world, even if one is a great pious person, we see that even when Srila Prabhupada was in India preaching, I think he had after he had left his family and he had left his family and he was basically alone, I think, and he was trying to sell a few copies of his BTG, and he was walking through the streets, and a big cow came and gored him, and out of the blue, and sort of left him very injured, and just lying in the streets like that. Srila Prabhupada was, he started to wonder. In one of his lectures, he described, he started to wonder that you know, perhaps I've done the wrong thing. Perhaps I shouldn't have left my family, or, you know, perhaps, you know, something like that. I'm getting some reaction for doing something. But then, you know, gradually he came to the conclusion, no, you know, because his spiritual master had, you know, and his God brothers and the scriptures had literally, you know, pushed him and ordered him to follow that direction, that, you know, this was just one of the tribulations that he had to endure, and, you know, but nonetheless, he still had to follow the plan of the Lord. It's sometimes very hard to understand. You know, even Srila Prabhupada was actually struggling a little, you know, very difficult to understand. He doubted, you know, have I done the right thing here? Sometimes the plan of the Lord is very, very difficult, especially when, you know, one is acting in a very, you know, pious, selfless way, acting on behalf of the Lord, and some great difficulty comes. It's very, very difficult to understand. You know, is this within the plan of the Lord, or am I doing something wrong? Because one should think like that. And this, of course, then how to resolve that? Maybe some, you know, sometimes one does suffer because we have to understand here. Bhishmadeva is describing to Yudhisthira that, you know, you are a religion personified, and Arjuna is the, you know, great devotee and friend of the Supreme Lord himself, you know, and Kunti is, you know, intimately related with the Supreme Lord. There's no question that they are suffering the reactions of karma, but, you know, for ordinary people, of course, what happens to them can be the reaction of, you know, karma, or sometimes even for devotees, you know, what they suffer may be the reaction of offences, apparatus. So we have to, you know, sometimes understanding the difference, you know, is this one of the tribulations that I'm suffering as I'm trying to execute the plan of the Lord through, you know, through no fault of my own, or, you know, have I, in fact, am I suffering the reactions of my sinful activities, my apparatus, my offences like this? So one needs to consider these things. But in the case of here, we stick to the case of the Pandavas and Yudhisthira, that, you know, for them, it was not a case of offences or apparatus or sinful activity. And the same with Srila Prabhupada. You know, and therefore, anyway, the point being that what to speak of those who are most pious, everyone must suffer the tribulations under the, you know, actions and reactions of time while they're in the material world, even if one is the most pious person. What to speak of those who are impious or offensive? You know, how can those who are actually not pious complain? You know, even one is the most pious person, they, you know, still, one has to suffer tribulation. So what to speak of others? You know, they should expect, yes, there will be so many tribulations while I am in the material world, so many difficulties. That's the point that we should take. Now, Bhishma, you know, he's another good example that, you know, as described in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, surrender all works unto me in full knowledge of me without desires for profit, no claims for proprietorship, free from lethargy, fight. Now, Bhishma, here's an interesting example because he chose to fight against the Pandavas. But he did that because the Lord actually wanted to show that even if you're, you know, a very great and powerful fighter, because Bhishma was actually the greatest and most powerful fighter of all, he was also a great authority in religious principles, you know, in all respects he was a great personality, but Krishna actually wanted him to show that if you're on the wrong side, what is the wrong side? That's the side of vices. Intoxication, eating, gambling, this and such, which we sum up in Kali Yuga. But, principles against, religious principles as enunciated by the Supreme Lord. If you're on the wrong side, you're on the side of vice, you cannot be victorious. Actually, the side which is supported by the Lord himself, the side of virtue or religion, that side will always be victorious. Therefore, even if you're a great personality, the greatest fighter, a great personality such as Bhishma, still you cannot win. So, Bhishma, he understood that this was also within the Lord's plan. This is one of the lessons the Lord wanted to teach. And so he still executed his duty, just like sometimes in the movies you see that you have the actors, and someone has to play the bad guy. If you have a movie, everyone can't be the good guy who becomes loved, adored. Someone has to play the baddie, and of course when they walk down the street, why did you leave her? Why did you do that? Because it's a movie, but many of the people who watch the movies, they think, oh, I hate that man. It's like as a child, we used to watch Lost in Space and Dr. Smith. Is there anyone? Dr. Smith. Did you not hate Dr. Smith? Everyone hated Dr. Smith because, he was always doing something sneaky behind the family's back to, everyone hated him, like that. So, the Dr. Smith and the Mahabharata, in one sense, Bhishma had to, he fought on the wrong side, But, he wanted to show, even if you're the most powerful personality, you're on the wrong side. But still, he performed his service. He's not going to become hugely popular in one sense. Everyone thinks, whenever people think of Bhishma, if they don't understand popular, why did he do that? Why did he fight on the wrong side? So many people read the Mahabharata and they think badly of Bhishma like that. But, a devotee, they don't consider their own profit in the activity. They never, that's pure devotion, of course. The pure devotees are like that, a pure devotee acts just for Krishna's pleasure, and they don't want to take any profit, any gain, any proprietorship, even on the subtle platform. Those who are pious, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, they approach Krishna. Four types of pious persons approach Krishna for some particular gain. That's good. Krishna says that's good. It's not pure devotional service, but still it's good. It's better than those who, don't acknowledge the Supreme Lord at all, who act completely independently of the Supreme Lord, not accepting his authority or his position at all. So those who accept, I accept the authority of the Supreme Lord, that he is maintaining everyone. So one may, approach the Lord like that and become pious. So they're beginning neophyte devotees. But the pure devotees, they don't ask anything. Although, Srila Prabhupada, when discussing this point, he described how, when there was a great difficulty, he was trying to acquire some, I think it was a Bombay temple, and there was a lot of obstacle, a lot of opposition. And he said that, it was okay for the devotees to pray for the Lord to, protect them from those dangers and obstacles. Why is that? Because the result was for the Lord's pleasure. You know, to build a temple for the Lord, yes, we pray to the Lord for his protection. Similarly, you know, devotees don't use the worship of Krishna to heal their physical ailments. You know, a devotee doesn't pray to Krishna, you know, Hare Krishna, and chant the names in the Sringa, what have you, that you please make me healthy, you remove this disease. But if a devotee is serving the Lord for the Lord's profit, then he may pray, you please remove this disease like this, because how can I possibly give you this nice temple, distribute these books like this? So a devotee in that mood may pray. But of course, you know, devotees may pray for other devotees. You know, here is such a nice devotee doing such a nice service. You know, dear Lord, you please remove whatever obstacles, preventing them from, going on peacefully, as a devotee. So devotees may pray for other devotees, or they may pray for the benefit, to go to the Lord. And they may even pray for themselves to remove those obstacles, thinking that how can I, my only desire is to do something on behalf of the Lord. So can they even pray like that? So that's still pure devotional service. There's a subtle difference there. Described the eighth offence of the holy name of the Lord, is it, we should not consider the chanting the holy names of the Lord to be, an auspicious, pious, ritualistic ceremony. Many people who come to the temple, especially to do sometimes jagyas or some skaras, from their point of view, they're acting in a pious way. They're approaching the Lord for some material benefit. From our point of view, we don't necessarily, we're not praying to the Lord for some material benefit for them. From our point of view, we're praying that somehow or another they've approached, come to the association of devotees, they've come to the association of Krishna, that somehow or another that they can make some advancement in spiritual life, and rise above this materialistic platform of approaching the Lord. So, we're praying in a different way, and of course sometimes we see that when people get a material result, even by approaching the devotees, it gives them more faith in the devotees. When they have more faith in the devotees, and when the devotees speak Bhagavad Gita, then they will listen. from our perspective, we have to be careful not to utilize the devotional service of the holy names of the Lord, just like one would actually utilize a material ritualistic ceremony, because that's the eighth offense of the holy name. So. So therefore, saying here that a devotee, they always engage in the service of the Lord, trying to understand the plan of the Lord, which is very difficult. Although the plan of the Lord, as Bhishma said to Yudhisthira, that you're under the shelter of the Brahmins. The principles of Dharma as described in the Shastra, and the instructions of Krishna. So, in essence, that also confirms that you're following the plan of the Lord. So the plan of the Lord is very, very difficult to understand, but we can understand it if we follow the instructions of the Lord, which are usually revealed through his devotee. Therefore, we see here that Prabhupada says, the popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord, because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. So the devotee doesn't necessarily, you know, when Arjun heard the Bhagavad Gita, it's not as if he had to get some new instruction that he didn't know. Actually Arjun was associating with the Supreme Lord and getting instruction from within. So, you know, that arrangement of Krishna teaching the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun was not necessarily that Arjun needed that new knowledge that he didn't have. He didn't have those realizations. No. The Lord, just as a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter, you know, by teaching Arjun, his friend, then he teaches the whole world. So therefore, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is for the less intelligent men. So sometimes we hear Prabhupada, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, because in the fourth chapter it describes that the Bhagavad Gita was actually, it's given to the Raja Rishis. It's actually meant for great saintly kings to understand it. But by teaching them, it is actually meant for the masses of people. So, you know, Arjun was a great Raja Rishi, Yudhisthira is a great Raja Rishi, and by teaching them, you know, it is actually meant for everyone, the masses of people. But it's properly understood and implemented by those great, devotees of the Lord. So time, in essence, time looks very similar to karma for the devotees. You know, sometimes the things that happen to a devotee, it appears to be very much like karma. But, you know, if devotees are actually nicely fixed in their devotional service and following the plan of the Lord, you know, these things may happen under the influence of time, which is, you know, the will of the Lord. There may be some tribulations or what have you. It appears to be calm, but it's not. Actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the preface from the very beginning, Srila Prabhupada says that from the very beginning of one's surrender to Krishna, Krishna takes direct, you know, supervision or charge of the devotee. And as soon as one, you know, comes to Krishna consciousness and begins properly, sincerely, the process of surrender, Krishna immediately takes charge. Which means that, as Prabhupada gives the example, that, you know, the plug of the fan, the fan is turning around, you pull the plug out, the electricity is no longer feeding the fan, but there's some momentum. It appears to be similar, but actually, you know, there's no real cause of karma anymore. You know. So as soon as a devotee actually, from the very beginning surrenders to Krishna, it's the plug is pulled out of the wall, the karma actually stops. There's some momentum to, because we still have a material body, we still have some conditioning like this, so the fan is swinging. It looks like karma, but it's not. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, time I am, in the 11th chapter, text 32, time I am, the great destroyer of the world. With the exception of the Pandavas, all on both sides will be slain. So he describes there to Arjuna, you know, it's better you follow the plan of the Lord, my plan. In essence, all of these warriors are already killed. So Arjuna, if you don't kill them and executing my plan will be executed anyway. One way or another, they will all be killed. If you don't do it, still it will happen in another way, but because my plan is there, that will not change. Okay. Of course, now, Krishna, as described in the Bhagavad Gita and as described here, Krishna wanted the battle of Kurukshetra, because it was actually a battle of virtue over vice. He wanted to establish the kingdom of virtue. He wanted to establish the kingdom ruled by, you know, virtue and religious principles, and he wanted vice to be, you know, removed. And therefore, the battle of Kurukshetra was fought on that principle. And therefore, you know, devotees like Yudhisthira and Arjuna, they had to suffer temporarily. There's some temporary suffering, you know, in order to attain that victory for Krishna. So as Prabhupada points out in one of the purports, that, you know, the best policy is to abide by Krishna's order without argument. It's a good policy for devotees, you know, to follow. That whatever is the Lord's order, you know, it's coming through the parampara and scripture. The best policy, you just follow that. Don't argue, you just follow it. That is the best policy. You know, if you understand things, you'll come to that conclusion. If you come to that conclusion, you've got the right conclusion. You know. Because, you know, if you follow Krishna's policy, it means you're following morality. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the last chapter, in the last sloka, Sanjaya says, wherever there is Krishna and Arjuna, there is morality. You know, this is the very, Krishna's instructions are the very, all the steps of morality leading up to the ultimate principle of morality. Therefore, if you follow Krishna's order, you're following the path of virtue. And to the degree we go away from Krishna's order, it means to that degree we are following the path of vice. And if we follow the path of vice, no matter how intelligent, no matter how pious, no matter, you know, if we have some previous piety, no matter how strong, no matter how wealthy, no matter how beautiful, no matter how much opulence, one has, no matter what influence or position, if we follow the path of vice, we cannot be successful. And that is Krishna's teaching. So therefore, the best policy is to follow the path of morality. What is that path of morality? That path of morality is the path of following Krishna's order. Ultimately, this is Yudhisthira's argument, Bhishma's argument to Yudhisthira, that he's trying to convince Yudhisthira to execute his duty and to take up the rule of the kingdom. Now, Bhishma knows that as soon as Yudhisthira understands that this is the plan of the Lord, he'll immediately accept it without hesitation. So Yudhisthira's difficulty is that he's not quite convinced that this is the plan of Krishna. But as soon as he understands that this is the plan of Krishna, he will immediately accept. It explains in the Mahabharata that actually the Pandavas, they were so intimately related with Krishna, you know, in friendship and love, that they did things that you would do with a friend, you would do with a relative. So sometimes, you know, in this circumstance, Bhishma is just reminding him, yes, you know, that is there, but don't forget, after all, he is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who's, you know, the controller of time and the controller of all things. And of course, you know, as that becomes crystal clear to Yudhisthira, then yes, he understands, you know, we must not forget that aspect of, you know, Krishna. Which sometimes, in their case, the Pandavas, you know, sometimes that aspect of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is covered because of their love and their intimate relationship. For us in the material world, we forget that because, you know, we're covered by our, you know, the material energy, where we want to absorb ourselves in, you know, lust over the material energy. And therefore we forget the Lord, we forget His supremacy like that. That is a different thing. But it is similar in the case of the Pandavas, but they're not forgetting out of lust for the material energy. They forget out of love for Krishna and that intimate relationship that Krishna allows them to have. So, you know, Bhishma is just reminding Yudhisthira that just, you know, after all, this Lord Sri Krishna, He is the controller of time, He is the controller of material energy, and therefore this is all His plan. What else could it be? And then he knows that as soon as Yudhisthira understands, oh, it's Krishna's plan, yes, I will, you know, accept without hesitation. So, these things are taught to Krishna. So, this topic of providence, what is the will of the Lord, as we started in the beginning. So we've discussed it, we understand that, providence is the will of the Lord, that either as a devotee one may have different happiness and tribulations, and as a devotee, a surrendered devotee, we take that as the will of the Lord. The non-devotees, they may also accept providence. They accept it as the will of the Lord, but actually what they should be accepting is that this is actually the result of our sinful activity, like that. But still, by providence, their karma, will catch up with them. So, and we're describing that, only really devotees, therefore, can deal with the subject of destiny and providence. So, I was actually reflecting on this. I remember when I was a brahmachari, we were in Perth. I was, reflecting on, destiny and what have you, and how I came to be a Hare Krishna, and there were a lot of things, going through my head. Is this meant to be? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Because I, as a, a kami meeting demon, I used to, I had, from very childhood, I actually had a lot of different dreams where I would dream the future, and then it would happen. Even into my teenage years. So I was always fascinated with the concept of destiny, and it always fascinated me, how can you actually see something in the future? And of course that concept opened up a lot of things, because if you can see something in the future and there is something destined, in essence it means that there must be God, because someone has to literally have something planned, which means that you can't have a plan without some intelligent being. A plan means, someone's thinking of something, they've got some concept, and they're going to execute it like this. So, if there's destiny, there must be one. So I was always, trying to understand destiny, because if it worked, it answered a lot of questions. I remember one time as a teenager, I had a dream where I saw two pictures, two boys. So it was all just black, and then in my dream there was two young boys, one was about two, one was about five, one was white and one was Aborigine. And one of them I couldn't focus, and in my dream I'm taking both pictures back, and it still was out of focus, and I'm bringing it forward, still was out of focus, I took one like this, and the other one like that. I just couldn't focus this one boy, And, it might have been a year or two later, I was actually living with this lady, and one day, after, living with her for many, many months, she came home with two photos, and she said, oh, look, I'd left these in the photographer's months ago, I forgot to pick them up. And when she showed them to me, they were the pictures of the two boys. And one of them was out of focus. And that's why I couldn't focus it in my dream, because, it was actually the photos. So I was actually looking at these photos years before, trying to focus them in my dream, and I couldn't focus because one was out of focus. I was actually looking at the pictures. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that. There's another occasion where I was living at home with Mum, and she said, go down the shop and buy the newspaper. And she said, you know, the shop will be closed soon. And I said, yeah, sure. And I dozed off to sleep because I used to work in Arthur's Seat in a nursery, a plant nursery. And I used to walk up Arthur's Seat and walk back down every day, or ride my bike down. And so when I got home from work, I was really tired. So I said, yeah, sure, Mum. And I dozed off. And while I dozed off for a couple of minutes, I dreamt that I got in my car at home, drove around the corner, come down this big hill where there's a bit of a bend, and just as I'm coming down there, this dog with large eyes and sort of fluffy hair walked in front of the car, and I slammed the brakes on, and I just about killed it. You know, I didn't hit it, but I just about. Anyway, then, you know, my mother woke me up. Oh, yeah, the newspaper. So I got out, jumped in the car, drove around the corner, coming down. And then I remember the dream, and just as I remember it, this same dog just walks out in front. And in one sense, I was sort of prepared for it, so, you know, I should have hit it, but I didn't, almost because of the premonition. But, you know, there are a lot of things like that. So when I was a brahmachari, I was sort of still trying to, you know, because all that you read these things in the Bhagavad Gita, and you're trying to, you know, how does this, you know, all fit into everything. And so I actually went and saw a clairvoyant. Well, I didn't see her, I rang her up. And I heard she was very good. So she said she was very, very hesitant to speak to me because in those days, you know, there was a law against being clairvoyant. You know, it was like if you were a future teller, like gypsies, it was against the law. So she sensed that I had some, that I was sort of part of something hidden. So she, you know, she didn't quite trust me. I said, no, I'm not going to do you. So she said, all right. What she was sensing, of course, that I was like part of the Hare Krishnas, you know, that I was part of some, in one sense, would like a secret organization, not really a secret, but for most people it was. You know, I went to saw a arrangement meeting, and when I saw her, she was very, very good. She told me that, you know, I just had an operation, got a scar on my right knee, which I just did. She told me the name of my, you know, partner at that stage was started with a K, which it did. And, you know, she told me a whole lot of different things, which are just exact, really good. She was really good. And then she said to me, you know, you're part of some religious movement. And I go, yes, I'm part of the Hare Krishnas. And she said, you should leave it. It will cause you a lot of trouble. How right she was. No, this is part of the discussion. She was seeing a lot of tribulations, which actually happened. Because you know, over the course of being a devotee, you know, I've been basically bashed, gulped, spat on, you know, humiliated, neglected, overworked, underfed. No. And we're not even discussing what the karmas have done. Actually, I don't. But sometimes some of the devotees that come to Krishna consciousness, you know, struggle with their conditioning, and they cause other devotees trouble. It happens, you know. We accept, we give everyone the opportunity to come be devotees. So sometimes some of the people that come actually cause trouble, you know, to other devotees. It's, you know. I remember there was one devotee in Adelaide, and he used to sleep in every morning, and no one could get him out of bed. He's brahmachari. So So the temple president said to me, "You go in, and one way or another, you get him out of bed." You know, I said, "Oh God, man, because this boy had a real temper." You know, I won't say who he was. So anyway, I go in there and I said, "Look, you know, I want to do this, but I've been instructed. You've got to get out of bed. This is like about, you know, 8:30 or something." It's not like, you know, 5 o'clock, 10 minutes after the long road is a bad idea. "Get out of here, young guy." I said, "Look, I'm not leaving here until I see you get out of bed, because I've been instructed to get you out of bed." You know, he pulled the covers out like this, you know, "I'm not getting out of bed." I said, "Come on. I'm going to get you out of bed one way or another." So then he just sprang out of bed and lunged at me. Punches flying everywhere. Bang, bang. You know, he was so angry that I had dared to, you know, disturb his sleep. He, you know, next minute, you know, he's got me in a headlock, and, you know, I got him in with punches and knees. And I just, you know, it was this full on brawl in the brunch area. So, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say what to speak of the one devotees. And actually, that same devotee, they put me with him on Sankirtan. Because they thought, you know, Ganga's the only one silly enough or brave enough, whichever one you want to term it, to go out with this devotee. So actually, we went out, we were doing a marathon, and we had all these candles and whatever. And what happened was, you know, the candles were just being sold in profuse numbers. And I know I was selling some, but, you know. And I said to him, "Gee, you must be doing really well." He said, "No, I'm not really selling much at all." I said, "What? Where's the candles going? Where's that stock?" Well, it wasn't me. This went on for a couple of days, and then I rang up the temple president. I said, "I think he's actually selling the candle and just keeping the money for himself." And so he said, "Well, you're going to have to question him about this guy." You know, here we go again. So I'm sitting in the car, and you know, we're out in the, basically in the desert. We're like hundreds and hundreds of miles out from back of South Australia, apparently up near the Northern Territory, and right out in the middle of nowhere, you know, hundreds of miles from anything, you know. I said, we stopped the car, and I said, "Listen, I think you're actually keeping some of the money." "Don't you start from me." I did, you know. And then I said, "No, I've been instructed to ask you." So then he's sitting, I was in the driver's seat, so he goes like this, he pushes his finger into my cheek, he says, "You start on me, Ganga, and I'm going to really give it to you," like this. And I thought, look, you know, one way or another, you have to give that money back. That was it, you know. He opened the door, he grabbed a hold of the side of the door, and he sort of lunged in with his feet and he sort of kicked me practically, you know, against the door. So then he jumps out, he goes running around the car, and I jumped out too, because I thought, you know, if I'm trapped in the car, you're really going to annihilate me. And I sort of opened the door so he couldn't quite get to me, and like this. So he's really, really furious, and then he started yelling and walking around. So while he wasn't looking, I opened the back door and put his bag out in the street, out on the ground. And then, you know, he sort of wandered around like that, started up the engine, jumped in the car up and drove off. And, you know, that was the last, I didn't hear of him, you know. I ended up going back to the temple after the marathon. I just did the marathon by myself. And the temple president said, "Who's your partner?" He's probably still out in the desert somewhere. Sure enough, after about a week, or, you know, something like that, he sort of come back to the temple with his tail between his legs and handed in the money, you know, like that. He admitted that he'd, you know, done something. So, yeah, some, you know, some strange things happen, you know, even as a devotee. There's another example. some of these things are, you know, sometimes even good devotees, you know, sometimes just might make some mistakes, so, you know, they're not. But I know when I was on the farm, some devotees were doing some, they'd come from Melbourne to do some work on the farm, and they'd cut some fence wire and what have you. And I used to always pick up the wire, especially the barbed wire, because you know, we did have, there was one bull, we used to have a bull, Nandi, on the farm. That was even before I went there. And it actually got wire caught around its leg, and, you know, as far as I understand, it got blood poisoning and died. Anyway, what happened was the devotees cut the wire, and, you know, they cleaned up the wire, but there was a couple of pieces they didn't see, so it was, you know, not crow's negligence or anything. But, you know, wire tends to curl up, the barbed wire. So one of the bullocks did get, you know, some wire around its leg. And I was sort of notified of this late at night. It was absolutely pouring. It was absolutely buffeting down. Rain was just coming down, you know, just like in pillars. So I had to go and get this bullock who's running around like the crazy cow in the dark in the rain, and somehow, you know, get the wire off its leg so that it didn't end up, you know, dying. And I got a pair of bolt cutters. There was another devotee, I think that was Brian, who helped me. We chased that cow, you know, up and down those hills. I mean, it was freezing, it was wet, we were saturated, it was scary, because in those days we had about 40 bullocks, so, you know, you sort of, you know, with long horns, so you don't know, you know, you run and chasing them around. Anyway, we, after hours and hours and hours, we finally captured this bullock in a pen, and we managed to, the bolt cutters and sit bang, and the fire fell off his leg. And then after that, I got pneumonia, and I was so, I practically died. I was so sick. You know, I was so ill. I really thought I was going to leave my body. Very difficult. So, you know, it's surprising the, you know, even as a devotee, you know, sometimes in our dealings with each other, what to speak of, you know, how the non-devotees are always trying to persecute, you know, the Hare Krishnas. So, you know, this clairvoyant was saying, you know, you should, you know, lead this Hare Krishna movement because, you know, there's so much suffering. She wasn't completely wrong, but, you know, I took it that, you know, that may be, but that's the order, that's the plan of the Lord. You know, that's whatever comes, you know, we have to develop the consciousness that whatever comes, we just have to accept that this is the plan of the Lord, this is the order of the Lord. And we fulfill that despite any tribulations, you know, ups and downs. And, you know, unhesitatingly. And of course, the difference is, I know that for myself, if I didn't take up the path of devotional service, I would still have so many tribulations and perhaps 100-fold more, because what Krishna does is he tends to reduce the problems of whatever they were destined, you know, he just reduces it to the bare minimum, you know, something which is to the advantage of the devotional service. But of course, if you do follow devotional service, you actually become, you know, gradually, you know, liberated in stages, and ultimately you go back to Godhead. And of course, you know, despite the tribulations, because, you know, as a non-devotee, you would still go through so much difficulty, but you wouldn't go back to Godhead. And as a devotee, your tribulations are reduced, but in the ultimate, you know, you go back to Godhead. But the tribulations you can't avoid. Although, you know, by Krishna's grace, it is certainly reduced. And even when the tribulations are there, we see that, as we said, with Srila Prabhupada, on, you know, laying on, you know, what, where he should have been in great agony and pain at the moment of death, Bhishma Dev, even the tribulations are there, Krishna still removes that the devotee is not suffering. Even the tribulations are there. And in some cases, the devotee can actually feel great ecstasy amongst what should be the cause of great suffering. So always, you know, there is no reason why one should ever hesitate to be a devotee or to surrender to Krishna just because there are difficulties at that. So, pretty much, I'm going to leave it there. So, therefore Prabhupada says in one letter to one devotee, he says, you know, if we're talking about destiny, past, present, and future. Prabhupada says, even if you don't know, you know, the past, the present, or the future, your best bet is to take the present opportunity to engage in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. And by doing that, you become completely perfect. So, you know, for devotee, that is their mood, they understand that whatever the future may have, not really concerned. Whatever happened in the past, not really concerned. Whatever is going on in the present, that's not really concerned. What is of importance to me is that the greatest opportunity that will ever be to take part in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, that I must seize, you know, without hesitation, without argument, without lethargy, and by that we become completely perfect. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Well, I'll repeat the words of Bhakti Vinodha Kaur. He says that, you know, we should balance our material life with our spiritual life, but we should favour more the spiritual life. So, you know, sometimes it may come to, you know, we try to, a balance is good because you have a wholesome material situation. Your life is peaceful and very... You know, you're happy and your mind is not disturbed. It's very good for making progress in devotional service, you know. If your life is too full of constant, problems, it can be too distracting, you know, difficult, especially in the beginning stages, you know, devotional service, and this one is the Uttama Adhikara. But, so, you know, to balance the material and spiritual life is a good policy, but sometimes we have to choose a little bit between one and the other, and Srila Bhaktivinoda, of course, says we should then, you know, always favour more the spiritual aspect of our life. You know, if it comes to, well, you know, I can do this, you know, this make the material platform nice, or, you know, I should do this, I'm not sure. You know, you always favour the spiritual to some degree, and at the same time working towards a nice balance. But because, you know, no matter how much you favour the material side, you will not remove the tribulations completely. The You know, we try to make our life as you know, as peaceful and as wholesome as possible, in the background of understanding this world is by nature a place of misery. So you know, there's only so much you can do. So you know, we do. You know, the devotee is very realistic. They know that okay, I can make this arrangement. I'll get this sort of you know maximum amount of sort of peace and stability in my life that's possible while existing in the material world. But if I endeavour for more than that, it's not possible because I'm in the material world. So therefore, you know, no use doing something ridiculous. Therefore, you know, save time and utilize that for, you know, spiritual life. Any other questions? Well, you know, that's Lord Chaitanya gives us the capacity. Actually, you know, practically everyone in Kali Yuga, you know, we're all on an equal platform. That you know, I would tell you, as I said, you know, before coming to Krishna consciousness, you know, look as hard as you could, you would not find any good qualities in me. But you know, there's no tolerance or perseverance or this, that, or the other. But you know, in the association of devotees, it makes it very easy. You know. Just like you know, as a brahmachari, you know, you get up you know very very early, and of course you know, coming from a background, I used to sleep until. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, sometimes 4, 5, 6 o'clock, I'd still be laying in bed, you know, enjoying. You come to Krishna consciousness and you're getting woken up at, you know, 3 o'clock, you know, 2 o'clock. And, but, you know, you're with so many other devotees, they're all getting up as well. So it just makes it, you just sort of almost, you know, tag along. You know, and you're not really depending upon your own, you know, prowess or qualities. It's just, you know, in the association of other devotees, things which are very, very difficult, you know, are not as difficult. And then gradually also we gradually learn to love Srila Prabhupada, you know, as spiritual master, the devotees, the deities, the Lord. And that love also, you know, a devotee tends to think there's nothing too difficult that I would do for you, you know, dear Lord, like that, you know. So this association with the devotees and purification, they make these things very, that are very difficult. And then if all else fails, we have prasadam. Prasadam and kirtan is Nanda has arranged a nice kirtan weekend. You know, these things just very, very nectarian, and that literally, you know, these kirtans, the prasadam, the association, that is our perseverance. That is our good qualities. That is our tolerance. Like that. Alright, so we'll just leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.